Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Mark.
And I'm Stu.
And this is Bad Screenplays.
We've been writing screenplays for years, but couldn't get anyone to read them.
On each episode, I read an unsolicited script.
And I read one. We pull them apart and decide if they're any good, but mostly try and have fun with them.
Maybe these screenplays will attract attention or get greenlit by First Draft Productions, our own fictional production company. I didn't even watch the Oscars and I don't know anything about it.
Snap.
We had this big play as if we actually give a shit.
I know. But yeah, that's what we live for. No, it isn't.
We created a competition for our podcast and pretended like we actually care about the Oscars.
Screenplays, movies, Oscars, yeah. So I just watched a 3-minute, I typed in what you need to know about the Oscars 2021.
Yeah.
And it was essentially, it looked like the theme, I hate to say theme because, you know, but it was very heavy in promoting female talent for a long time, I think the Academy has overlooked. So, like, Natalie Portman had a dress on that was covered in the names of female directors and writers and co-directors and etc. And there was loads of other, you know, good performances and things. But, I don't know.
Not much going on. I don't even know who won some of the categories. The ones I can think of is, I actually did watch Nomadland and thought it was very good, to be fair. Yeah. Like, and that won Best Picture, I think.
It did. It won Best, was it Best Director or Best Picture?
Might have been both, you know.
Yeah.
I think there's only ever been two Best Female, Best Directors with women ever in the Oscars, and this was one of them,
really?
I think, yeah. I think it was the Chinese director of Nomadland and Catherine Bigelow. I think they were the only ones.
Oh, that's right. Well, pains me to say theme, because it wasn't a theme. Like, the theme suggests that next year it'll be a different theme, and it's not like that.
Yeah.
You know what kind of an industry this is. Like,
if
you go on a set, you know, how many women carpenters do you work with?
Exactly.
You know, and the same with me, there's like six guys in my office. So TV and film is male dominated, and it's hot. Like, I know it must be hard to like fight against those stereotypes and everything if you are a woman trying to get into the industry. If you're a guy, it's hard enough.
Yeah.
Imagine like having everything stacked against you. So to go ahead and make a movie and win Best Director.
Oh, yeah.
That's insane. That's so good.
And it was good. It was very good. You know, well deserved as far as I'm concerned. But it's funny though, I do think it's good that they're trying to right some wrongs and they're trying to correct some things by saying, okay, let's shine a light on the women of Hollywood. And you go, okay, that's only a good thing. But part of me goes, okay, do that. But also, from every single role, like what you just mentioned, just make it easier. And so there's a natural sort of influx of women writers and women directors and women, you know, this, that, the other.
It's not a standout thing. It's not like, it shouldn't be of note because it should be as normal as, as a seeing a woman next to you in a voting booth on election day. You know,
have you ever raised an eyebrow? But no.
I know. So, excuse me. Right?
So, yeah, so it shouldn't be the type of thing that you have to shine a big light on and make a big thing out of. But anyway, I suppose it's a step in the right direction, I suppose, isn't it?
It is.
Righty-ho.
But there was another piece of television that I think caught both of our eyes this week. This time.
Brand new Partridge.
That time, it's now time, this time. I forget. I only watched, as big a Partridge fan as I am, I only watched the first half because the kids were screaming and running around the house, and I thought, I've got to savour this in my own time. I can't have half an eye on this. But you watched it.
They've tried the best to jam-pack it because it's not an Iannucci thing. It's not written by the same team who wrote I'm Alan Partridge, which that's just layered to death. So that's why it's so watchable and so quotable.
Right.
And it looks like they made the conscious effort to just really just jam-pack. And they must have done about, 20 friggin' rewrites of the thing just to cram as much in as possible. And I have to say, it was really good. Genuinely really good. And
what I saw, it was very funny, yeah.
It was. There was just loads of, small little bits and bobs where, he bends down to sort of speak to someone and his knees
oh my God.
Crack and he winces. They were just stupid little things.
I love that. Yeah. That's great. It's the Gibbons brothers. So it's I think Rob and Neil Gibbons and Steve Coogan wrote it, and they started working together. I think Mid Morning Matters was when the Gibbons brothers first got involved. So it was like the new Partridge. You'll see from then on, it's a newer version of Alan.
Yeah.
The only thing I will say is that the first season of this time seemed like a real half hour on air program with all the bits in between and the gaps and everything. This one, this time, seemed a bit more packed. Like you just said, it's loaded with lines and, and gags and little things.
Yeah.
It seemed like quite one, two, three, like it was so fast. Like I think the first one benefited a little bit from that breathing room between gags, almost that little, I don't know. Look, like I say, I only watched half an episode, so I can't critique.
Yeah, and it's subjective as well, isn't it? I feel like the first series was trying to be like a realistic one-show thing that was like crack starting to appear, whereas this one is going for the sort of not realistic at all. This would never, ever be on television, but it's dead funny and it's very Alan Partridge. And so in that respect, I was like, I'm in.
You're right. That's the way to look at it.
A realistic TV program. I want it to be an outrageous Alan Partridge thing. And it was.
Yeah, it's great. All right. Okay. I'm going to finish watching that tonight.
It was good. It was good. I'm looking forward to the rest of them. What else have I been watching? I watched the 6-part Samurai documentary on Netflix.
What?
Which is actually very, very, very good.
Oh my God.
It was absolutely epic and really, really well done, to the point where I was like, this is like Game of Thrones, but real.
Whoa.
And a history lesson, because it's like talking heads thing as well. Really good.
Are you serious? Like with, who are they interviewing? Like, Rex Kwando types?
No, real travelling Ronin samurai. No, they were just historians from different universities and stuff like that.
Nice.
Although there's one samurai or one guy who claims to be an actual samurai. And
is he American?
No, he's not. Is it? It's Tom Cruise.
Did you ever see that movie?
The Last Samurai? No. Fucking hell. He's a samurai and he's a Caucasian white. He's like a white American man.
Yeah, he was an American army officer, I think, who went native. Well, like, he was meant to go and do something or do some deal, but then he fell in love with a samurai girl.
A lady samurai.
And it to only to be accepted in the village of Samurai.
Samuel Jackson. Was he in it?
He's in everything.
Samuel.
He's in every movie. Remember that line from Ted? That line from Ted 2, I think it was.
Oh,
and he goes, the girl's called Samantha Jackson. And you go, what's your middle name? Like Linda or something. She goes, so your name is Sam L. Jackson. Sam L. Jackson. She goes, who's that? And he goes, you know, every movie ever, he's the black guy.
Oh, God. No, I'm the other black guy. I've seen that when he gets mistaken for Lawrence Fishburne and he doesn't take it well.
Oh my God, yes. I loved you in The Matrix. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, there's Lawrence Fishburne.
So good.
But this is a good documentary. Oh yeah, this guy who claims he's a real samurai and he's there with his sword sheathed and there's like a tennis ball machine firing tennis balls at him.
Yeah.
And he takes a couple like balls whizzing past just to gauge it. And the ball's coming at him at like 150 miles an hour or whatever. Whatever a normal serve is, 120.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
And it comes at him. He unsheaves the sword, slices it, and puts the sword back in again. And
no! It's
like a little puff of smoke coming out of the tennis ball. It's really impressive. You have to find the video.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's really good.
All right. Okay, I'm in. Watch that.
It's like superhuman reactions, you know. So this guy reckons he's a samurai. But the documentary, again, it's just. Goes throughout like the 1500s, like the Civil War for 100 years and all the different warlords and all that stuff. But it's very addictive to watch. Like, it's really good.
Okay. All right. I'm in.
We'll have to find that samurai script. Maybe someone could send us one of those. That would be fun.
Oh, that'd be so good. That'd be so good.
Would be excellent. I just want to say a quick hello to our new sub Redditors. We've got a group of people who've joined our new sub Reddit. We got thrown in. Reddit jail from a couple of other subs for being a pair of dickheads. So yeah. We've created our own subreddit, so you can't ban us from our own subreddit.
I'm sure they'll find a way.
So we got kicked out of the podcasting subreddit for saying that we've got a podcast.
And is it a life ban?
A lifetime. Oh, no. It was a temporary ban, and we got a life ban after we sent them this. Hi. You are a big posh sod with plums in your mouth, and the plums are mutated, and they've got beaks. You make pig smoke. You feed beef burgers to swans. And you have big sheds with 20-foot-high chickens. And these chickens are scared. They don't know why they're so big. They're going, oh, why am I so massive? And they're looking down at all the little chickens, and they think that they're an aeroplane because the other chickens are so small. Do you deny that? No, I think silence speaks volumes.
And then we got our ban.
And then we sent them that, and we got a lifetime ban. So
fair enough. I think it's worth it.
Oh yeah, of course it's worth it.
We've gone out on our own now, so we've got our own sub Reddit.
Our bad screenplays. You'll find it. Just Google bad screenplays. You'll find it. And we've got a few members already who've been sending the screenplays, and a few of the screenplays of people we read out have joined. So hello to you, and thanks for the.
I'm doing one tonight, aren't I?
You're doing another Robarge. Is it your turn to go first, you?
No, Bobolution was me.
Oh, so it's my turn to go first. Okay.
You're first.
So you're doing a Robarge after I've read my one here. We also have a little poll going, which we'll talk about at the end of the podcast, which is quite fun. Ooh. Interesting results on the new sub. Anyway, should we get into the screenplays?
Let's do it.
You have sent me one called Nigel Escapes Death.
Okay. I struggled this week, actually. I almost like too much to choose from. Mm-hmm. So I read a ton, and then I was like, okay, this is good.
Your eyes go a little bit sort of square after reading like a dozen screenplays, don't they?
Well, they say that's the thing. Like, if you go into a shop and they have like three types of cheese, you're more likely to buy the cheese than if they had 500 types of cheese.
Okay.
The shop with the 500 types, people just stare at them. They're overwhelmed with too much choice and they just walk out.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. I can totally see that. You just end up coming up with cheddar. But it's a cheddar. Nice cheddar.
Want some cheese?
Have we got a writer of this screenplay? Who was written the screenplay? Nigel Escapes Death, written by some human type person.
Yeah.
I probably could have guessed that.
Anon.
Anon. Fade in. External. Fishing hole. Evening. A calm evening on a tranquil lake surrounded by trees. Nigel, 40s, a heavy set fellow with thinning hair, an open Hawaiian shirt, fishes over the side of a rickety wooden boat.
That's a good look.
I'm getting a, what's his name from Newman when he was in Jurassic Park? That's what I'm thinking.
I thought I saw a Tony Soprano.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Did he wear a Hawaiian shirt or he wasn't a Hawaiian guy?
Surely he did at some point. Or big open shirt anyway.
With the vest underneath, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
He's getting an English accent. I've done a couple of poor American accents, so I'm thinking it's going to go English. Anyway, Nigel. Come on, boys, just one little bite. A nibble. He downs the last drop of crap beer and tosses the can on the pile of empties in the bow. Nigel. Serves you right, then. Nigel stands up, unzips his trousers to piss over the side. Just then, a brilliant fireball screams overhead, sloshing through the night.
Ooh.
Holy. The boat shifts with Nigel's sudden reaction and capsizes, dumping everything in the lake. Nigel surfaces amongst the beer cans. Shit. External. Wooden road. Night. Wooded road, not wooden road. A wooden road. Surely that's a bridge.
Yeah.
The headlights from Nigel's beat-up truck pierce the mist that crawls over the dirt road. Internal Nigel's truck. Nigel squints through the dirty windshield as a hula girl dances on the dashboard. That's definitely Jurassic Park-esque, that, isn't it?
Oh, it is.
He's definitely got a little hula. That's that, whatever the dinosaur is. The
Slothosaurus. He does. A bit Bobalicious.
It's Bobalicious. External wooded road. The truck swerves right where the trees appear to have been obliterated. The tires crush burning branches as it traverses the newly minted trail. External clearing around Alice's ship. Night.
Alice.
At the end of the trail. I used to do that part. I used to watch. Oh, what's that? Is it Luther?
Yeah, Alice.
I never watched it, but
no, Alice.
She'd be watching it by herself. I'd just go, Alice.
You never watched Luther?
No, it's just him running around.
Sort your life out, lad.
Coat's too tight on him.
Really?
Yeah.
Too Man, tight. It's okay. All right.
she absolutely loves it, but I've never watched it.
Come on.
Okay. I think we all watched the finale of Line of Duty, and most people agreed that it was a bit shit.
I know. It was like, really?
I think...
Really? Where was the...
That's not why you watch Line of Duty, is it? For these big reveals. You watch it for the whole intricacy of it, and they built it up for a big reveal. That wasn't
right.
What it said it was going to be.
And you know what they did at the end? No spoilers, but they did that thing where they tell you with text on the screen, like what everyone's up to or what they did. That was enough to convince my mother-in-law that it was based on a true story.
Oh, shit.
I didn't have the heart.
Oh, no. Oh, my God. So you didn't say anything?
Nah, lad.
Oh, man. She's not going to
So it is a true story because they tell you at the end what they're doing.
Oh, man. Oh, bless.
I know.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
External clearing around Alice's ship. At the end of the trail, a small circular flying saucer lies half buried in the earth. A tree, barely vertical from the impact, falls forward and smashes into the disc.
Ooh,
disc. Internal, Nigel's truck. Nigel is wide-eyed and slack-jawed as he pulls into the clearing. External, Nigel's truck, still dripping. Is he just ejected in his pants at the sight of it?
Alice!
Alice!
Still dripping, Nigel steps out of the muddy truck. External clearing. It's extremely heavy rain outside my window at the minute, so I hope that the mic doesn't...
Is it? No, I can't hear it.
Okay. It'd be quite atmospheric if the mic picks it up.
Yeah.
Okay. Nigel. Hello? You're right in there.
You're right.
You're right. Get in the word. Nonce.
Alice.
Knocking can be heard from within the vessel. Hold on, saucer people. Nigel drops the magazine. What magazine? That's why he was dripping. That's why he was dripping.
What?
Runs back into his truck and pulls a chain from the bed.
The bed?
Bed of the truck, maybe. Bed truck.
Oh.
Nigel, I got this. Or, I got this.
I got this.
It's I got this, or I've got this.
I've got this.
I've got this. External, Nigel's truck moments later. Tires spit down rapidly as the tree is dragged away. External clearing around Alice's ship moments later. A circular door opens on top of the flying saucer. Escaping steam hisses around it. Alice, 20s, a helmeted female figure dressed in a skin-tight metallic jumpsuit, slinks out of the wrecked craft.
Hey.
A bare midriff and inappropriate cleavage show off her purplish skin, covered with leopard-like spots.
What are the odds?
I know. God, this person who wrote the script, he doesn't want to name himself, having his own little fantasy, isn't he?
Yeah.
Nigel, make a grown man cry. She stumbles a little, then steadies herself. The woman takes off her helmet and throws it to the ground. Alice, throw it off, bitch! Nigel, that's a nice ride. I'd hate to pay that deductible. Okay. Can you hear that rain?
Yeah.
Can you? Oh, shit. It's like insane hailstones pounding the window next to me at the minute.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, shit, is that loud on the mic?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
That's all right. You'll add to it, don't worry.
Okay. Alice. To Brilig S. Alec. Alice, thank you for crucifixing my gimbal. Nigel. To Brilig S. Nigel, I think. Alice, this is so loud. Alice rolls her beautiful eyes and plops down her helmet. Points to a blinking device on her wrist. Alice.
Yeah. Uffish is whiffling coming. Help, help is coming to through this translator. Got all Bandersnatch.
Bandersnatch.
Bandersnatch. Strange. Did you watch that?
Yeah, I did.
I was disappointed, you know.
You didn't like it?
I thought it could have been spectacular, although I would have just liked an episode of that story.
But it was the first ever, like, the novelty of it alone was like...
It was... I did it wrong. I was skipping through it, and I was like, okay, I'll do this, I'll do that. And then the guy just jumped off a balcony. I was like, whoa, no, I didn't want that to happen. So I had to do it again and do it again. And he ended up getting this...
That's not wrong.
The same outcome. But
I was... That's not wrong.
I suppose it's not, but...
The point of the story is you can't escape your fate, I think.
Does that happen on most outcomes then, do you think?
I think it does. I think it the same thing happened in different ways.
Okay.
I tried like 7 different ways.
Did you get
every decision
outcome?
I made, I went back and made the... Something different happens, but it leads you down a path that ends up at the same path.
I
seem to remember.
Okay. Okay, well, I mean, that makes sense. It's got to be of some sort of linearity. I did it and I felt like it cut it really short, and I was like, okay, right. So this is only going on for like 20 minutes, and then it finished. So I did it again, and it was only slightly longer, and I did it again, and it was still quite short, and I was like, I just want to watch an hour of this kid
of this,
developing it, and this developer who's like some genius, I want to know about him, and I just want a story. But
we're talking about Bandersnatch, the Black Mirror interactive special on Netflix, which I think is probably still available.
I'm sure it is. You know, it's very impressive, and an insane amount of work's gone into it. But again, I just love Black Mirror, and I think I'm just used to those stories giving me like a certain payoff, and I'm kind of used to that. But I can't take anything away from it. I think it was just my takeaway from it. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
Anywho, Nigel, that's okay. I'm often Bandersnatching. And at the worst possible time, Lord knows my wife can tell you that.
He's always watching Bandersnatch.
Is Bandersnatch at the worst
possible? Nigel!
Are you watching it again? Alice raises an eyebrow and laughs. Alice.
Nigel, Mimsy Bandersnatched.
I've got into my really, really bad German accent now, haven't I? From that Nazi script I read out a while ago.
Yeah.
The device on Alice's wrist beeps steadily. Wait a minute. Are we talking about the same thing? With a dazzling smile, Alice stands up and saunters towards Nigel.
Nigel Vorpal Mimsy.
She leans in and plants a sweet kiss on Nigel's cheek. Literal sparks fly from her lips as Nigel stands completely still. Alice steps back, picks up her helmet, and is almost instantly bathed in a column of brilliant light, along with her ship. Nigel shields his eyes for a second, then whoosh, gone. The girl, the ship, only the furrowed earth remains.
Well, what the fuck?
Fair play, Nige.
I know, whatever he was doing, it was working.
External, the rusty nailed pub, night. Nigel nurses a pint of Guinness at the nearly empty bar as Clovis. 60s, okay, that's a bit of a funny sentence. Tends bar in a sweat-stained white shirt, eyes devoid of any hopes or dreams.
Most people drink Guinness in a bar, don't they?
Yes.
I bet Guinness sales have been hit really badly during COVID.
I'd say that's a very fair observation, man. Definitely.
Like regular lager and beer and wine and stuff, nah, no problem. Mm-hmm. Everyone's been drinking that at home. But Guinness, you read that out then, it just occurred to me, I haven't drunk a pint of Guinness in a long time.
No, well, no sort of non-draft Guinness of any real high quality, as far as I'm concerned, exists.
Exactly. It's a draft only. You really can't mess with a draft Guinness.
No. They've got those little vibration machines. Have you seen those where you pour it in, press it, and it goes boosh, and it creates the head on it?
What?
Have you not seen this?
Is it like an instant thing?
It's, I don't know exactly how it does it or what they've put in Guinness, some mad chemical, or whether it's good for you. They have them in
iron filings or something in it. Yeah. Reacts with the they magnetise it, run volts through it. Creamy.
Yeah, but it gets a nice head on it. You put the like a can of flat Guinness in a glass, put it on this machine, press the vibration thing, and it just instantly turns like that white colour, that, you know, like creamy colour, and as if it's just been poured, and then a head appears on it.
Guinness vibrating plate. Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's still raining outside.
It's called a surger.
A surger.
A Guinness. Oh, no, you have to buy a special can, though.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the Guinness surger can.
Oh, so you can get them at home. That's fun.
Right. A sonic foamer.
Oh, what? That's my
sonic.
That's not my DJ name.
Sonic Foamer. Oh my god.
There's a video of a guy doing it. He presses a button and it vibrates it and it turns into a nice pint of Guinness. Are you watching a video of it?
No, I didn't want to play it. Yeah, I'm watching a video. Oh yeah, it's like a little thing. He pushes the button. It's like a toothbrush charger.
That kind of it does, yeah.
Size. Oh, look at that. It just I bet if you put an electric toothbrush in it as well, it would do the same thing.
So you need to buy special Serger cans, don't you?
You do. Why? Why?
Because they're the ones with the irradiated cobalt filings inside to make a lovely pint of Guinness.
Yeah, they soak the hops in barium before they...
barium enema.
Well, look at that. Wow. We can't cure cancer, but we can put a lovely head on a Guinness.
They've spent millions on that, haven't they? They've spent millions on creating that.
Guinness?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Is that new? No, it's not new. This is from 2012.
It's been a while. It's been around for a while. It's not that good. It still tastes like a can of Guinness with a widget in it. It doesn't taste like... Yeah. Draft Guinness tastes like a specific thing, doesn't it?
Do you know what I want to do? I want to go to Dublin. Have a nice drink in a pub.
Yes.
And a nice dinner on the square there in Dublin. Great steakhouse.
Have a lovely lamb lunch.
Lovely. Like in the centre of Dublin.
Yes, that sounds fantastic. That sounds absolutely, like, the best. Yeah, I want to do that.
All right.
I want to do that, please.
I want to go to there.
Yeah. So, Nigel nurses a pint of Guinness at the newly empty bar as Clovis tends to sweat-stained white shirt, devoid of hopes or dreams. Thornton, Clovis and Thornton, 50s, a barfly who will likely die in this very spot, sits a few stools down. Nigel. And then she was like, whoosh, gone. Just like that. Clovis wipes.
Just like that.
Just, I'm trying to refrain from doing that.
Don't. Just like that.
I got a Tommy Cooper birthday card once, which is one of his one-liners was on it. It was, I'm on a whiskey diet. I've lost 3 days already. Well, that was quite good. It's a good line. Clovis. You mean to tell me that you went to rescue this alien bitch and all she did was kiss you? Nigel nods and sips his Guinness. Well, I tell you, my friend, you gone done royally fucked. Totally, completely premium quality fucked. Nigel, how so? Clovis puts the glass away and leans forward to the bar. You rescue an alien and I give you superpowers, mate. Everyone knows this. A super suit, glowing jewellery that makes ridiculous objects appear out of thin air.
Everyone knows that.
Everyone knows that. Thornton, yeah, you could be zipping all over town, cape flapping behind you, not hiding here with your wife. Though I understand why, knowing Gladys. Poor Gladys. Thornton leans over, punches Nigel in the arm. Ow, bloody hell. What you do that for? Oh, God, I'm getting lost in these voices now. I don't know who's who. Thornton. Not impervious to pain. That's unfortunate. Oh, no, wait there.
No.
No.
Thornton was the London. Was not impervious to pain.
That's unfortunate.
That's it.
Clovis. Maybe the superpowers are dormant. Let's find out. Clovis and Thornton laugh as Clovis pulls out a shotgun from under the bar.
Oh!
Oh, shit. What's going to happen now? This is going to blast them. Nigel's phone buzzes. The screen shows a smiling Gladys. 40s, smiling and attractive. What the hell? They're shitting on Gladys. She sounds lovely.
Yeah.
Nigel's. All right, boys, wish me luck.
The old battle axe.
The old battle axe. She's like 40.
Yeah.
Thornton. That's a dead man walking there. That's a wrong voice, don't care. External. Nigel's house, Knight. No. Oh, God. Nigel's truck rumbles to a stop in front of a modest brick house in a quiet neighbourhood. A figure peeks through the lace curtain, then disappears abruptly as the porch light flickers on. Hail Mary, full of grace. What's wrong with Gladys? Like, internal. Nigel's front hall, Knight. Nigel walks in, puts his keys on a painted ceramic bowl shaped like a girl in a swimming pool.
Nice.
Nigel. That is very Tony Soprano. Nigel. I know you're up. I can feel your breath on the back of my neck.
Right.
Internal. Nigel's living room. The TV is on. Gladys, 40s, sits on the couch in a ratty old bathrobe. Fucking hell. The etched lines on her brow indicate that yes, Nigel is a dead man. So he's gone missing and he's gone to the pub with his mates.
Yeah, he went fishing, then he went for a bevy.
Then he went for a bevy. Okay, maybe Nigel's dodging his responsibilities. Gladys.
Down the Nile, were you? Did you, I don't know, somehow forget that you're supposed to work tomorrow?
Nigel, I can explain. Honest, you see, there was this. Suddenly, a light flashes outside the window. Gladys instantly transforms from a furious housewife into a seductive woman of insatiable desire.
Alice.
With a stripper's flair. Stripper wearing flares. She tosses her robe on the floor and throws herself onto Nigel. Gladys, between kisses.
You don't have to.
Is she alien? Explain anything. Only you don't have to. She reaches down to his crotch and smiles broadly. Gladys.
Now that is a ball minty.
Nigel smiles. External Nigel's house night. The lights in the house go dark. Fade to black. The end.
So, man fishing, alien crashes, goes and helps her.
Mm-hmm.
She says thank you. He goes to the pub, comes back to his battle-axe wife, and then the alien comes back, turns his wife into a stunner, and that's his treat.
Turns his wife into a submissive, horny nympho.
Well, yeah, actually, all right, yeah.
This is what he's after, I think.
Alice.
Revving up the engines of spaceship lies in bits. He's a chubby loser, he's eyeing me with grubby mitts. Highway to the betrayal zone.
See why they didn't put their name on it, though. Right?
Yeah.
Some human. The bar was Simpsons, wasn't it? It was Mo, Barney, and Homer.
Yeah. It was kind of like a sketch. I think a lot of these short scripts are more like sketches, aren't they?
Yeah. So, I've ordered two clubs, right?
Okay.
Okay. Now, I'm still sticking with the... the thing, I don't need all these irons, and I don't even know what a wood is yet.
Okay.
And all this stuff, right? So I did a putt. The last lesson was putting.
Mm-hmm.
So we went out onto the little putting green, and he showed us how to. There's all these like little exercises you can set up with string and tees and things, and you can learn to putt. And he sets this thing up. He goes like 5 foot out. 10 foot out, 15 and 20 foot, right?
Mm.
So he points at the 10 foot one. He goes, how many PGA golf professionals like Tiger Woods, etc., can get this? Like, what percentage do they get it in from here?
From 10 foot?
Yeah, from 10 foot. So we're all like, 90, right? He goes, no, it's like 40 or 50%.
Wow, okay.
So we're going, oh, brilliant. So, you know, the pressure's off a little bit. He's like, yeah, you only see the best ones on TV, so don't put yourself in this false. Anyway, the short of it is, there was four people in the lesson that week. Three of us had bags of clubs.
Right.
And the one glove and weren't sinking putts. And one of us turned up with nothing. And was crushing it from 15 foot out.
Nice. Amazing.
I got one in, right? I curled it. He goes, look at the contour. I curled it up. It dropped in. And the instructor, I turn around. He's doing the wanker hand sign. He's like, oh, come on. Piece I was like, what? Was that right? Did I do good? He's like, shut up. So
you're like the equivalent of like someone who's played golf for years, you know, like on online gaming, If you've like spent like hours and hours and hours ranking up your character, and everyone sees you as like, you know, someone who's really good at the game, you drop into like the sort of the games with players that you'll rank, and then you just create a new email address, start from the beginning, and just go and absolutely lay waste to everyone.
Right,
you've got the reactions. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
That's you then, Stu, isn't it?
Just go and crush them. Well, it turns out I might have a little knack for golf, or it might be some beginner's luck. So I've ordered a couple of clubs, one for smacking it quite far, and one for putting it in. And I think those are the only two clubs I'll ever need.
No.
I'm told no. Yeah, I'm told no. But you anyway, we'll get
the club's
get some
got
gear.
A range. You know, the club's got a range attached to it, so you hit a pitching wedge full force, you're only going to get a 50 yards. If you hit a 9-iron full force, it's going to go 70 yards. You hit a 7-iron full force, it's going to go 100 yards. That's the whole thing, innit? That's why you need them.
How is it?
Yeah, you don't just hit it harder to make it go further. You use the specific club to make it get that distance. That's the whole deal.
So you just smack it the same every time, but because you're smacking it with a different stick, the ball goes less distance?
Yeah.
Oh.
That's the whole
deal. Oh, so it's really not that difficult.
Well, on paper, no. But in practice, it's really fucking difficult.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's really, really hard.
Okay. All right, I'll let you know. Golf update.
You get, like, semi-okay, and then you start doing things that you shouldn't be doing. And then someone just turned around to me and said, when you're on a course, just keep it on the fairway. Don't try and boom it. Just don't try all these ridiculous shots. Don't go off and get it over that tree, or I can get it between those two trees. Just, like, even if you just had to hit it, like, 20 yards to keep yourself getting around the corner, just keep it on the green. And I finally started doing that, and I could see, like, at the end of me round, my score was getting better, and I was like, oh, yeah.
Nice.
Oh, shit, that's good. Because I'm so rubbish at golf, and I'm always in the trees, I've actually gotten really, really good at getting out of trees and roots and danger and gnarled bits and stuff, like.
All right.
Because that's where I live, on a golf course.
In the rough.
In the rough. With fucking Tom Bombadil.
Tom Bombadil.
Oh, yeah, Stu.
Cool.
It is a special day today. I just realised, you being the biggest Star Wars fan I have ever met in my entire life.
Do you know what? I actually said this at dinner tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah, I realised what day it was. It's not lost on me.
Nice.
It's not lost on me.
Well done.
But and I said it out loud and everyone went, oh, shut up.
You who's never watched the Star Wars film in your life.
I know.
Nice. Okay.
Okay, now.
We've sent you a script. It's another one from Jason Robage, who sent us the one we read out the week before last, which was the Big Score?
Big Score.
Was it called The Big Score?
J. Joseph Robage. Is it? Oh, it's Jason Joseph Robage, isn't it?
Yes, I believe.
J.J. Okay. Yeah, Jason Robage.
So he sent us another script, and I emailed him back saying, thank you very much. Your sort of slightly offbeat, silly, funny tone, it just happens to match the podcast really well.
We like it a lot.
A lot of screenplays you read, the tone, you don't know exactly where they're coming from. You don't know what they're trying to put across. You don't know who they are who's writing it. But something about his writing just matches our podcast well, I believe. And so we've got another one of his for you to read, Stu.
And he's got two entries in the Bad Screenplays Best Screenplay for next year now.
Yes. I think he might be the only writer who's had two screenplays on our podcast. He might be the first.
Frigo sent us a couple, but we only read one.
We only read one. And then
did he send you the email, the address yet?
No.
Ah, Chris, come on.
I think if we email him every day saying, where do you live, he might send us, he might reply.
That'll probably make him more likely to send his address.
Yes.
Right.
And can we have your phone number? Please. No, we're going to leave Chris well alone.
Yeah, the Unibomber.
Okay.
All right, so I've got your script here. Southern Hospitality.
Yes.
By J. Joseph Robage. Internal Bus Depot Day. A middle-aged ticket agent with thinning hair over a forgettable face types away at a computer. Norman, 42, pleasantly plump, excitedly approaches. I'm thinking of John Candy.
Oh, yeah, he's back.
Right. Ticket agent. Welcome to Fuller's Transit. Fuller's. How can I help you? It's like Red Apple cigarettes from the Tarantino movie, right? That's the brand he created. He puts them in everything.
Oh, shit.
And a pack of red apples. Yeah, Butch, pack of red apples.
No way.
Okay, I'll look off for that.
Norman. Well, the thing is, I just got fired from my job. And now I'm going to live my dream. I'm not doing a southern accent. I'll do it. I'll just do it. I'm going to move to the country and finally become a writer. Ticket agent. Sir, that's a lot of exposition to tell a stranger. So that Wayne's World, isn't it? Where he goes, good job we ran into that security guy who happened to give us all that information. He had an awful lot of information for a security guy. Well, I'm moving to a small town in Alabama. I sure hope the locals are welcoming of a stranger, especially a Yankee like myself. Was the Yankees the Northern?
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's right. Yeah. Okay. Ticket agent. Again, sir, this is a lot of information, and honestly, completely irrelevant, you know, to a guy just selling you a bus ticket.
It's a cracker way to get around exposition, isn't it? Just calling it out from the start. Oh, it's really good.
It's great, yeah. Okay. I'll take a one-way ticket to Greenbow, Alabama, where the rest of my story will take place. Just to clarify, sir, I don't care. That'll be $147 for the ticket. Norman snatches the bus ticket from the agent's hand, mutters something under his breath, and kicks over a garbage can as he walks away. External bus depot morning. Norman exits the bus after a long journey. The morning sun glistens off his greasy hair. Norman sniffs under his own arms. It smells like he has an... It smells like he's got an asshole in a headlock. Nice line.
That's a good line.
As much use as an asshole right there. The other passengers avoid Norman as they make their way to collect their baggage. External dilapidated plantation house afternoon. Candyland. Norman stands... everything for today is Tarantino for me. Norman stands on the lawn of a run-down estate, speaking with Billy Ray, the caretaker of the property.
There's a Shutters place around the corner from where I live. You know, these plantation shutters that everyone seems to be buying now. And it says, plantation blinds with colonial elegance. On the shop. That's how they describe them.
Oh my God.
They want you to know that, really? That their plantation shutters are called plantation shutters and they've got colonial elegance.
Oh my God.
How bad's that?
Empire.
They're really proud of it. They're really, really proud of that description.
That's so bad.
It's really bad, isn't it? I'll send you a picture of it. It's on Allerton Road, Stu. You know very well.
I do. Okay.
It's terrible. Anyway.
Plantation. Okay. Billy Ray, dressed in dirty overalls, speaks with a strong southern accent. So you just bought a place out on scene. Must be crazy in a corn pattern.
That was good. I enjoyed the beat beforehand.
Beat, yeah. Who was that? Have you ever heard of who's that? There's an Aussie singer who is more southern than C.W. Stone King. You heard of him?
Fucking hell, no. I mean, I love southern names. Oh my God,
C.W. Stone King. And you hear the guy, he's an Aussie, but he dresses in a southern gentleman style and he plays the guitar. and he, I saw him on Jules Holland like 10 something years ago. More.
He's got a little dicky bow.
And he just, he's got a little dicky bow sometimes. But you should hear him talk.
Oh, really?
He's, yeah. You get that little Aussie twang now and again, but he's southern as they come.
Whoa, that's really weird. That's really strange.
Yeah. So you just bought the place sight unseen. You must be crazy than a corner possum. Well, it was a good deal. The broker said the place has a lot of southern charm and it isn't haunted. Those were the two things at the top of my priority list. What do you plan on doing with the place?
I do love southern names, though. You know, like whenever they pop up in, like, say, like National Lampoon's, where it's like, "This is Ruby Sue."
Yeah, yeah. Is any of those names with Jean after it? Yeah, yeah. Carrie Jean, Norma Jean, Sharon Jean.
Like people called Shug and Elmo, like proper deep south names.
Oh my god! Did you listen to Serial?
Yeah.
Right? And you heard one with...
I only listened to the first one.
Oh, the second one is about a guy in Alabama.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And there's some characters in that. Yeah, there's some good characters in that.
Oh, shit. That. Is that the one that we... Yes. I didn't finish it because I was expecting it to be exactly like the first one, which I absolutely loved. Is it about the soldier who just goes missing off an army base?
No, that was... number three, I think.
Oh, shit.
Or maybe it's two and I'm thinking of three. But the one I'm thinking about was a southern guy who was like a clock. He repaired clocks.
You're talking about S-Town.
Oh, I am. S-Town from Serial. Yeah, I am. You're right.
It's still This American Life, though. It's still the same people. Sorry, man. That's
I'm sorry. It's not Serial. Okay.
It's so good. It's so fucking good.
Right.
That is Jarby McLemore.
Jarby McLemore. That's right. That's right.
It's very good. Very,
very
good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's like gilding clock parts in the middle of a forest and
with
people...
cyanide. Yeah. Yeah. And he's buried all his gold in his maize and stuff. It's like, oh my God.
When you say that, he buried his gold in his maize. Yeah. Just sounds like completely like fantasy, doesn't it? Speaking of like interesting names, interesting in brackets, have you ever seen what Tyson Fury's kids are called or heard? His wife was shouting across the house, "Prince John James Fury."
Fuck off.
Prince John James, Prince Adonis Azamaya Fury, Valencia Amber Fury and Venezuela Fury.
Of course they are.
Venezuela. Of course. Little baby Venezuela.
Venezuela,
little baby Prince Adonis Azamaya.
Wait, hold on.
Yep.
There's one called Prince John Joe or something.
Yep, Prince John James.
And when you say Prince, you mean like his first name is Prince?
Who fucking knows, man? Who even knows? And honestly... I don't know. I think Tyson Fury's becoming more and more popular or well-known in America, but we've had to fucking deal with him for decades over here. And he's you got to commend the guy for, like, you know, battling his mental health demons and coming back from, like, 50 stone or something to get back in a boxing ring. But, you know, the man's a gobshite. Let's not dance around.
Oh, yeah.
He's a dick. And his kids have got very stupid names.
Venezuela. Here... John, Mary, Venezuela, here, miss.
Venezuela. Hello.
Okay. Billy Ray.
Billy Ray.
What do you plan on doing with the place? Well, I'm going to set up an office and finally start writing the book of short stories that have been floating around my head for years. Billy Ray. What kind of stories do y'all write? Y'all. It's only one of them.
What kind of stories y'all write?
Y'all, that's a group, right?
I think that's how they say it, though.
Nah.
No? Okay. All right, man.
Nah. Joseph's a northerner. He's from Minnesota, I think.
Yeah, he is.
I don't know. You know more than I do. What kind of stories do y'all write? Well, I have one about a cowboy who's afraid of horses. And another about a time traveler who goes back and invents the first toilet. Billy Ray just walks away abruptly. Norman continue. I also do Everyone Loves Raymond fan fiction. Billy Ray under his breath. Silly ass yank. Silly ass.
Can you do it? Can you do a Ray Romano impression? I was just about to launch into one and then stop myself from doing it.
I got one ready, but I know when it comes out it's going to be shit.
Okay.
So no.
Should we compare notes?
You just end up sounding like Kermit the Frog.
Yeah. Norman gives Billy Ray an angry look. What? All right, then. Sounds interesting, says Billy Ray. External front porch the next afternoon. Kenny Carlisle, 65 years old, front teeth missing under his thick mustache, walks heavily up the steps and knocks on the creaky screen door. Norman answers, annoyed. What do you want? I'm writing. Afternoon, neighbour.
Hey,
I reckon I'm welcome.
I was just going to say. Sorry, you do the better voice. You did the voice to me once and I nearly fucking cried laughing. And I didn't realise it was an impression of Family Guy. I'm not that familiar with Family Guy. It was old man voice from Family Guy.
No, like, I don't watch Family Guy.
Oh, do you not watch? Oh, was it you then? It was like,
no.
It was like a whistle kind of voice. Like
Whistling Willie. Afternoon, neighbours. I reckon I welcome you a part of the world with my wife's famous pie.
is that not a Family Guy voice? No,
I don't watch it. I don't know.
No, I see. So you just made that up then.
I made it up.
I like. Well done.
For some reason, I like Seth MacFarlane in A Million Ways to Die in the West. Ted. You know, I just don't like Family Guy.
Oh, yeah. Fair play, man. Fair dude.
I never
really got into it myself.
No. South Park made me hate it before I'd even seen it.
Yeah, it made me just, like, not ever be able to decide to want to watch it.
Right, because it was stupid. Yeah, I know. I'm sure it's good. I get it, yeah. Fuck with the northerner, yeah, by giving him some disgusting local crawfish pie or some shit.
He's changed his tone, hasn't he, Norman?
Fucking northerners. We were somewhere doing a job and like 90% of the crew are from New York, from
right,
Queens,
yeah.
Brooklyn, Long Island and Manhattan, Jersey. Mm. And like we got gathered together and said, listen, guys, because they're just fuck. I love them. I absolutely love them. Mm. They're just crass and loud, and the jokes are filthy, and the swearing is. You know, there's that joke, isn't there, in New York City? You go up to a cop and you say, "Hey, officer, can you tell me the way to get to Times Square, or should I just go fuck myself?" Because that new, you got that New York, like, hey, what the fuck?
Nice, I love it.
So obviously, Norman has a little. That's a lot of that.
Hey, go fuck
Kenny.
Yourself.
Yeah. Oh, I get it. Fuck with the northerner. It's a peach pie. Well, I'd appreciate it if you got your inbred ass off my porch.
Ooh.
Huh? I heard stories about you country folks fucking with us northerners. Still bitter about the Civil War, huh?
Ow.
Friend, I was just showing some southern hospitality. No need to get riled up. Norman slaps the pie out of Kenny's hand and then slams the door. I said, leave me alone. Well, there you go. Internal local bar night. Several men sit at tables drinking beers after a long, hot southern day. Audrey, the bartender, auburn hair as beautiful as a sunset and a voice as sweet as Mrs. Carlisle's peach pie. Nice little reference. Greets Norman as he approaches the bar. Audrey. How do? What can I get you, sugar? I'll take a Fuller's.
Fuller's?
Yep, that's what you want. A nice, hot, multi-fullest.
Oh, mate. Do you know what? After I read this script, I googled what beers did people drink in, like, Alabama and places like that. This is Alabama, isn't it?
Is that okay? Yeah, yeah. Greensboro, Alabama.
Greensboro.
Is it green? Yeah, green something.
I think it's Greenbow, but it's pronounced Greenbow, like Greenbow, but it's like Greensboro. But I think that's the
point.
It's like in Yorkshire, there's a place called Slaithwaite, but you call it Slawit.
Oh, how do?
It's, do you come from Slawit?
Slawit, no, Slaithwaite.
Yeah. See, Slaithwaite. What? So I googled some beers that people drink at this part of the world, and naturally, craft beer revolution is in full swing, and whatever stage of it we're in now means that it's well more commonplace than just some shitty, like, fucking dishwater that people are going to be drinking.
Oh,
so
yeah?
It's more common for these massive craft breweries to have, like, you know, things embedded in the culture and stuff like that. And I came across something that's really popular called breakfast beer.
Right. What?
So there's a brewery called Breakfast Hero, and it's one of the most apparently, you know, I'll stand corrected if anyone wants to correct me. And they've got this thing called a pastry stout. Get on this description. It sounds delicious, but this is a beer that you have for fucking breakfast. This beer is brimming with notes of syrupy covered pancakes, melty baker's chocolate, subtle vanilla ice cream, and roasted hazelnut coffee. All of the above backing this lactose creamy and chewy body, which makes this the perfect pairing with any breakfast dish.
Oh my god!
So breakfast beer is now a thing.
That
apparently
sounds freaking awesome.
It sounds amazing, and it sounds like I would have a beer with pancakes for me breakfast now.
What was that called? The Breakfast Brewery or something?
Breakfast Hero is the brewery.
You know, want to know something? When the water in London was so shitty you couldn't drink it, everything was fermented. So you would drink beer all day. It was like 1 or 2%. Like, you could drink it all day.
Whoa.
But because it had been fermented, there was no bugs in it anymore. So people would drink beer for breakfast.
That's the original way to clean water, wasn't it? Like, through Vikings and stuff like that. That's why they drank beer,
right?
Wasn't it? To clean up water, and that's where wine came from, wasn't it? That's insane.
That the percentage of that beer would be quite telling.
Yes.
I don't think it could genuinely be a breakfast beer if it's more than
3%. It's an interesting point. Breakfast Hero Pastry Stout, that was the one I just described. Let's have a look. But I went from going, you can't drink beer for breakfast, to going, I want a beer for breakfast.
I want it.
What percentage is that? 8.5%.
Start your day right.
There's a brewery in Barcelona called Garage, and it's probably my favourite brewery. It's sensational. You can get a pack of, like, mixture of their beers, and one of their beers is called Soup. And it's like an IPA that's like, it's virtually chewy, you know, like they just described. It's so thick. It's like a meal in a glass, but it's lovely. It's called Soup.
Whoa.
Really good.
I want to travel the world again, drink some beers.
Same.
But we'll have to travel with scripts.
Yep.
I'll take a Fuller's. Sorry, we don't have Fuller's.
We got Breakfast Hero Pastry Stout.
Fine. Look, I'll take whatever swill you yokels drink. He ain't trying to fit in here, Norman, is he?
No.
Audrey pours the beer and hands it to Norman. You must be Norman. Yeah. I've heard about you. Kenny told me what you did to the pie. Well, I'm certainly not gonna fall for his bullshit. Kenny's a sweet man. He means well. Well, fuck him, his wife, and his pie.
Oh, shit.
Oh, I love it. Well, come on, hon. You're a stranger here. Don't you want to make friends? Why would I want to be friends with you ass-backwards southerners? I'm here to write, nothing more. He was so happy in the bus station.
He was, wasn't he?
Well, that's a shame. It really is. You're kind of cute for a Yankee. Audrey smiles and walks to the other end of the bar to take someone's order. You speak to the woman like that, she still likes you.
I know.
Well, maybe this backwater ain't so bad. Norman's gone southern. Montage of Norman at the bar. Oh, nice. Gonna need a montage. Norman seen drinking, enjoying drink after drink, and chatting with Audrey. Norman and Audrey getting closer. Norman singing and slapping the locals on their backs. Norman and Audrey slow dancing. Norman, obviously drunk, heads out the door.
Having a slowy.
You ever seen The Other Guys with Mark Wahlberg and Will Ferrell?
I have seen that, yeah. The police officers.
They are. Do you remember that scene where they go out, like, drinking, and they do the montage thing, but they do it, like, still images, but, like, the camera's moving through... like the Matrix, you know, so you've got like a still.
Oh, yeah,
Everyone's in place. Like,
nice trick.
It's freaking hilarious. Like, he's biting a priest on the arm and firing a gun in the air. Like, that was one hell of a night. Audrey, y'all hurry back now. Y'all again. Norman, slurring. Oh, I will. I'm starting to love this place. All of you people have made me feel so welcome. I could really build a life here. Y'all are my kind of folks. Everyone in the bar cheers as Norman stumbles out of the door. Internal car. Late night. Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
He's zigzagging home. Norman smiles as he reflects on the night. Sweet Home Alabama plays on the car stereo. Norman laughs, turns it up loud, and falls asleep at the wheel. External ditch night. Norman is trapped in the wreckage of the car and heavily bleeding. The car begins to go up in flames. Norman looks hopeless. Suddenly, Kenny approaches. Oh, thank God you're here, Kenny. I'm in a...
Kenny. No, Kenny.
Norman, thank God you're here, Kenny.
That was like... I'm in a... That was like someone hacked me earphones then and just came out of nowhere.
Thank God you're here, Kenny. I'm in a bad spot. I'm so glad you're here to help, please. Norman extends his hand from the wreckage. Kenny laughs. Who said I was here to help? Is he the whistler?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Who said I was here to help? Wait, what do you mean? What happened to the Southern hospitality? I gave you a chance, Norman, and you acted like a proper asshole. That was before tonight. I finally get this place. I'm a new man. There was a montage.
Kenny.
What in the hell is a montage? Kenny walks away from the burning car. Fade out. Oh.
Goodbye.
Never reject a pie from a stranger.
No, peach pie sounds great.
Sounds lovely.
That was a bit like, maybe we shouldn't talk about it in case we end up using it in some capacity. A sketch that you wrote a long time ago, Stu. Long, long time.
Oh, that's right.
About it, a burning wreckage and a funny outcome. I genuinely thought it was really, really funny. But it reminds me.
That's good, huh?
Reminded me of that.
I know what you mean. Yeah, we'll use it at some point. That was really funny, Jason. Nice one.
It was good.
I like that. Good written. And he did the same thing, you know, kind of referencing the fact that it's being written and montage and you know, the rest of it.
Yeah, he's a writer. There's no two ways about it.
For sure.
Great script. Got a few booked in. We've got a few in the pipeline. There's a couple I really want to try and use, but they're excerpts. And it means reading a really long screenplay to get the context of the excerpt and trying to make it fit in. The ones that are 6-7 pages long, they just work so much easier. But some of these other longer ones with the excerpts are genuinely really good. There's one by Zachary Dolan, which is just great. And there's another one we were sent that complete with missing pieces. It's fantastic. But they're just not as easy to fit in, but we're going to find a way because they're really good screenplays. But yeah, thanks everyone for getting involved on the subreddit. We've got a poll going at the minute of what sort of genres people might want to hear read out on screenplay. No surprise.
There's a leader in the poll, right?
10 votes for comedy screenplays. Yeah. Which, you know, that's fine because, you know, that's cool. Number 2 is probably horror. We don't read a lot of horror scripts, but people want us to read horror scripts. We'll dig some of those out, eh, Stu? Do that.
All right, we can do that. Yeah, I like a horror.
Yeah, I do. If you can find a good one, it's really, really good. But I think I'll just try a bit harder.
Must try harder.
Thanks to everyone who voted. Nothing for action and nothing for mystery. We read a lot of action and mystery scripts out on the podcast, Stu.
I know. Spoken.
And
comedy. Who doesn't like to laugh?
So comedy, horror, western, sci-fi. Okay.
All right.
Homework. No problemo.
No problemo.
That was fun, Stu. Enjoyed that as always.
Nice couple of scripts. Thanks again, everybody, and we'll see you next Friday.
Yeah. See you next time. See it on the sub.
See you on the sub. Bye.
Bye. Move into the country, won't eat your dirty peaches. Move into the country, I hate your southern features. Move into the country, get drunk, insult the locals. Move into the country and die in front of yokels.
Thanks very much for joining us for another episode of Bad Screenplays.
If you enjoy Bad Screenplays, maybe consider sending a script of your own to badscreenplayspodcast@gmail.com. Thanks to Andy Donovan for artwork, and thanks to Acast for continued support.
If you like the podcast, please tell a friend, maybe even subscribe, and we'll see you next week.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.